time to listen to the interviews from Island Life on Saturday, the 27th of September, 2014. Island Life is Waiheke Radio's weekly look at Waiheke people, events and issues. It's brought to you every Saturday morning from 10 till 12 by the Humble Pie Village Butchery. You'll find them at 102 Ocean View Road, Oneroa. On Saturday, the 27th of September, David Basham talked to Tony Ann about living on Rotorua Island. He spoke with Carl Majori about Architecture Week, and he talked with Miran Lawler from Direction Mātiatia.
And my next guest is Tony Ann, and we're going to talk about how she lived on Rotorua Island. No, she wasn't a child alcoholic. She happened to go and live there. So, good morning.
Good morning.
Whoa, that's a voice that sounds just like my mother and my sister, because Tony Ann's my niece. And just the other day we were talking about, a few weeks ago, about Rotorua, and I suddenly thought, we better talk about it. So what year are we talking about? You were living on Waiheke.
That's right.
With your mother, your father, and your brother.
That's right. We Gregory. Lived up in Turi Road.
That's right, yep. which we started visiting. We've always been visiting there like it was a family place, wasn't it?
Indeed. So,
what year was there? Just so I can't.
Okay, we're looking at 1961. I've worked it out to be
right. Okay, so that's when
I was a wee schoolgirl then.
Right. So you were at school on Waiheke.
That's right.
And your father, what happened? He got a job. Well, he had a job. He was a builder.
That's right. Dad was a builder on the island, and he got a contract to build a chapel, on Rotorua. So we packed up and we went for a year, or about a year, I think it would have been. Yeah, I think so. And that meant getting rid of my little dog. We weren't allowed to take Karamia.
Oh, she was a little dachshund.
That's right, beautiful reddish brown.
And did you have to?
Yeah, my way older brother Don took.
Oh, Don took her. Yeah. Oh. And did you get her back or did he keep her?
No, I didn't get her back. She went to a farm. So that was a bit sad, but the rest of it was a big adventure. We went to Rotorua on the Mahoe. That was the boat that did the run to Auckland or wherever, around the Gulf.
I mean, for people who don't know, and there's probably not many people who don't know, that was a place for recovering alcoholics run by the Salvation Army.
That clarifies it.
Right.
Yep. Okay. Yeah, and we arrived on a beautiful day, and it was just like a big park. The lawns, these great big phoenix palms, it was absolutely beautiful. And, of course, the mode of transport was a cart and donkey.
Of course, there wouldn't have been any vehicles over there, would
there? No, that's right. Mm. Only a wee bit of road, you see. So everything got loaded onto the cart, and I got to sit on the cart with all the luggage, and off we ambled up to the house. We went through the park area and up a big hill. We were in an old house overlooking Ladies Bay. It was very, very beautiful.
Yeah, it would have been.
The house isn't there now, but yeah, I don't remember it very well.
So that's Ladies Bay and Men's Bay or something, or there's two bays named like that. I remember seeing in the paper.
Yeah, I think at one point there may have been men and ladies on the island or something. I'm not sure. Yeah. Although I think the ladies alcoholics were at Pakatoa.
Right.
A long time ago, but there were quite a few rafts being built and a bit of toing and froing, so that didn't really work out, apparently. Yeah, so we got up to the house on the hill, and donkeys can be quite jealous. There was another donkey, and he came trotting over, and he was jealous that he wasn't on the cart. So while I'm perched on the luggage about to get everything off, he bit my donkey. And off we went down the hill, this big steep hill. The donkey yelled and bolted. Mm. with the cart, all the luggage.
And you.
Yeah, me. I remember Mum screaming, and I remember we hit a bump, and I remember flying through the air with all our suitcases and boxes. Yeah, it was all quite...
Oh, gosh, I've never heard that story.
And then landing absolutely winded, but, of course, fine, little tough Waiheke girl.
Yep.
Jumped up and was okay.
Mind you, you did have an introduction when certain young males in your family would push you down the hill in a pushchair, so you had a fair introduction to it.
I was used to rough roads, sliding down the farm on sledges and being bounced off and all that, so... Yeah, but anyway, it was all very exciting. I suppose it was a sort of a bit like being in a Famous Five book, I felt like, anyway.
Oh,
you know,
right.
Arriving on this cute little island.
Famous Five goes crazy on Rotorua.
Yeah, sort of like that, but there was just me.
Yeah.
And my little brother, Gregory, who was about just over a year old then.
Oh, gosh.
1.5, maybe.
Oh, was there many other children there?
There were two other families. There were the McFarlanes, and they had quite a few children. It might have been about 5. And there was a couple my age, a girl I was quite friendly with. We were good pals. And then there was Major McCallum, and they had a son, Mr. and Mrs. McCallum. And he was an older boy. I think he was sort of, might have been about 12 or 14 or something.
How did you get on for schooling?
Oh, schooling was fabulous. Every 2 weeks, a beautiful canvas satchel arrived in the mail with 2 weeks' schoolwork. And it was really fun to unpack it and see what you got. You'd get art supplies, all sorts of ready material, and, of course, the workbooks.
Right, and that was the correspondence school. Came out of Wellington,
yep.
I think.
That's right. And you'd tune into the radio. I think it was about 9 o'clock. On would go the radio, and then you'd get a broadcast, you know, about education and.
Yeah, I've listened to them.
Yeah, it was good. Yeah. And the stories, of course. But being a little eager beaver, I'd get through all my 2 weeks' work in 1 week.
I was just going to say that. I was just going to say, knowing you like I do,
it was like,
you would have got through all of that work, and you'd have been desperate for some more.
No, I wasn't. I was ready to go exploring.
Okay.
So, so I'd listened to the broadcast the first week and it all made sense, but the second week it didn't really because I'd already done the work, you know. But the stories were always good. And I think there was music, but that, I always thought that was a bit funny. Anyway, off I'd go down to play, see if I could find some playmates. And if it was my week off,
which,
Mum didn't mind.
Which you created.
Yeah, Mum didn't mind because I'd done my work. She couldn't really stop me. I don't think she was busy with my little brother.
And I don't think she'd want to. I think knowing your mum, she'd have been happy. If you'd done your work, off you go.
Yes. Mm. But, of course, the other kids couldn't come and play because they had to stick to their schedule. But that was okay. I always had things to do. Each morning I'd go down to the cow shed. I'd walk down the hill and climb over a stile, over the fence and down a track. And it seemed like a very long way down to the cow shed with a billy and a jug for the cream. But looking at it when I went back to Rotorua about 2 years ago, it actually wasn't that far, but I think for a little girl it probably was.
Well, it's a bit like the property up in Terry Road. I can't believe how little that front yard looks.
Yeah.
Up there.
Yeah.
But when I was a kid, it was enormous.
We thought it was massive.
Yeah.
Unless it shrunk.
Yeah, I know. It must have
probably
shrunk.
Probably the council widening the roads.
Yeah, they pinched something. Because I can't believe it. It's so small. Because I've got photographs, and as you know, and it just looks so big. Sorry. I've taken you off the subjects. So you used to go and get the milk and the cream? Oh, how lovely.
Yeah, it was lovely. Straight from the cows. They'd milk their own cows. And if it was spring, I could feed the calves, you know, with a bottle while I was there.
That'd be fun.
Mm. And there were great big vegetable gardens. There was the lodge with all the inmates, and everything was growing. It was fabulous. And we would have I think we had local meat as well. There was, you know, animals, pigs, sheep, what have you.
Were you to keep away from? I mean, was it sort of segregated in that you kept away from the people that had come over for their treatment? Or
no, I don't particularly. I mean, you know, I wouldn't go wandering over there, but they used to actually come up and visit us because we weren't Salvation Army family.
Oh, of course.
And so they could, you know.
Yeah, and because your mum and dad were very sociable people.
Yeah.
They were very gregarious and there'd be lots of fun.
Well, that's right. And, of course, they weren't allowed to drink either while we were there.
Oh.
So, on the wagon. And but they loved to come and talk because it was somebody new, you know, I suppose, and we'd just come from Waiheke. And, in fact, there were, I remember, lawyers and doctors and all sorts of people.
Oh, yeah, it's quite a cross-section.
It was quite interesting, these interesting conversations going on. And even overhearing about the brew that was going on in the piggery, there was, a bit of alcoholic brew happening there, hidden away in the piggery somewhere. So they managed to get a bit of alcohol somehow. But it was all, you know, quite exciting.
I can remember, and I know you don't remember this tale, but I'm sure your dad told me about having to number his paint tins. Because they'd try and get, in those days, the paint wasn't acrylic, and they used to try and get the thinners out of the paint.
Oh, probably.
And I remember him telling me that they used to have to number his paint tins so he knew how many he'd taken away. And yeah, I don't know. I don't think I would have made it up, but.
No, I don't remember that, but if that's what you remember, it probably was right. Yeah. You wouldn't think of something like that.
No.
So, Dad worked away building and...
He worked on his own?
Well, I think he might have had some help. I mean, he would have needed a helper.
To do some bigger
work.
But there wouldn't have been a shortage. Mm.
And him being a carpenter, he would have done all the woodwork, but the outside of the chapel was block. It was brick. Actually, bricks, So I suppose a bricklayer may have done that. But he did all the woodwork and some other building bits and pieces over there at the time.
And you used to have a highlight, didn't you? You and your dad used to go somewhere.
Wednesday night, movie night. Yeah, Dad and I would go and there'd be a movie showing and I think we'd go over to the big building and... Yeah, it was all quite nice going out at night, just Dad and I, because Mum had to be home with Gregory. And down we'd go and climb the stile and look at all the stars if it was a clear night and watch the movie. And we always went, no matter what the movie was, black and white, of course. And half-time.
Surely it wasn't black and white.
Indeed. And a cup of tea and bickies at half time.
Oh,
and
gosh.
I was allowed a little cup of tea.
Ooh.
Yeah, so.
Oh. And did that go down well with the other kids who weren't allowed a cup of tea?
I don't know if they even went.
Oh.
I don't know. I might have just been the indulged child that went to the movie.
Because you probably had a little bit more freedom than the.
Yeah, but I don't think they
Because you'd lived on Waiheke, so you were used to getting out and about. Some of those Salvation Army might have been city kids.
Yeah, I don't know. I think it was just nice for Dad to take me. It was just our little outing.
Because when you lived on Waiheke then, it was no power, no street lights, no telephone.
No, we had power.
Did you have a generator?
We had power.
Oh, you had power
then?
We
had power, yeah. Mm. At Rotorua, we had a coal range, I'm pretty sure. Mum cooked on that.
But she had a coal range at Terry Road too, so she'd have been used to it.
Oh.
I remember it.
Okay, I don't even remember that.
I'm a little bit older.
There you go. So, it was a good time. It was healthy and fun and... You could have a swim, just run down and have a swim, easy as. and it's good memories. Mm.
Did you spend a lot of time on your own?
Yeah, I think I did spend a bit of time on my own, but most days I'd go off and play. We'd do our work in the day, in the morning, sort of, and play in the afternoon, play around. And but I loved doing artwork, so I'd always be drawing pictures and what have you. And I loved rambling around the island as much as I could. Wednesday, oh no, it'd have been a Thursday night, we'd have the cows in our yard for some reason, because our house was plonked in the farm. And I remember these cows would come and would rub against the house, and right by my bedroom there'd be a cow rubbing its side on the wall. It was like, I used to think, my God, it's going to crash through the wall and land in the bedroom. Yeah. But of course it never did. That was a bit scary. Yeah, but, you know, we'd have fresh fish all the time and
all those nice things.
Yeah, Dad would go fishing and
He liked doing all of that, didn't he? He was a great one for making sure that everyone got fed.
Yeah, and I remember the opening of the chapel. That was a really big day. It was very exciting. People came over from the city and everyone was dressed up. In fact, I've got some slides of that day, which I must get over to, because there's a museum over there now with all
information
about the history of the island, which is really good.
Oh, they'd be impressed with that.
Fabulous little museum. And I must do that.
What do you think was the highlight for you living over there as a child?
Just the environment, really, and the not going to school was, you know, although I like school, but just doing the correspondence was fun. It was just different.
Yeah, I suppose the unexpected things arriving, because it's always fun to get parcels. We don't quite get them the same now, do we?
The kids were nice to play with. Everybody was lovely. That, you know, we met the inmates and, no, it was good. I look back on it as a really happy time.
Right. But you've been back once, haven't you, since?
Twice. I went planting trees about 20 years ago.
Whoa.
Yeah.
And then you went back again.
A couple of my kids over.
Recently, haven't you? A year or so ago? More?
2 years ago. Actually, it might have been more like 30 years ago when I went over planting trees.
I know. How could you do that and be a child as well when you were there? So that's marvellous. So you were, what was it like to go back as an adult, recently?
It was great. It was really, really good. Of course, the big hostel's gone. That burnt down, I think.
Oh, really? Yeah.
And it's quite different, and it's a lot smaller than what I remember. I do remember the artwork the men would make, and we had some of these. They would make powershell sailing ships, a lot of very, very fine work. This was a sort of a therapy thing. And items made of matchsticks, you know, the burnt matchstick?
Oh.
The trays and...
Remember your grandmother used to do that?
Yeah.
But she wasn't on Rotorua.
And I think there was even one made a model of the chapel out of matchsticks, I think, if I remember rightly.
Gosh.
I might have seen that when I went back at some point on display somewhere.
Oh, that's amazing.
But, yeah...
Oh, it's really good to it's really good to sort of reminisce about that, and you think it's a good, you know, is it a good day to go over? I mean, you can go over now,
it's
can't
fabulous.
You?
Fabulous! It's really a great day.
Is it worth it now? Is it a nice
trip? Absolutely, absolutely.
I haven't done it, so I must go, because it's not that far away. You just go down to the bottom end, and there's a boat at times, isn't there? Do they do it all year or just the summer?
Yeah, I think all year.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, no, it's a really good day out. And, you know, like the inmates, some of them couldn't stay away.
No.
They'd
come
get
back.
Rehabilitated and go off to town.
And then they want to come back.
Start a new life, and next thing they'd be back again.
No.
They would have, you know, got back into the drink sometimes and... But they just, some of them just loved the island, I think, and just wanted to keep
it. It was just
back
a peaceful place for them.
Yeah, because it was such a good life
compared
to...
The city can be quite quite, well, there's lots of temptations where there wasn't there.
And there was a great network of friends and all that.
I think that museum would be delighted to have your slides. Because they could do lots with them, couldn't they?
Well, they could go...
They
would go on display because when I had a look, I don't remember any slides of or any photos of the chapel on opening day.
No. So, well, you had a real involvement with it, so it probably... Who took the slides?
Dad.
Oh, right, he did. Because he always had those... He had things like that, didn't he?
Good cameras. So I should hunt them out.
Oh, that's wonderful. Anyway, well, thank you for coming in. And
it's a pleasure.
Oh, it's nice to see you, as if I don't see you very often. Okay, well, thanks for coming in, and that was great.
Thanks,
so, I must go sometime and go and have a look. Maybe we can organise it and. Just go over and have a good look around.
We will do that.
Okay.
I think there's a cafe as well.
Oh, my goodness.
So there you go. You'll be able to get your coffee.
Does that mean you won't be making cheese straws?
I can always make some and take them.
Okay.
Island Life. Join us for your weekly catch-up with what people are doing and what people are thinking here on Waiheke. Issues, events, personalities and more. It's all here on Island Life on Waiheke Radio, Saturday mornings 10 to 12. Brought to you by Placemakers Waiheke. Know how, can do.
Well, we have got our next guest in the studio, and this is Carl Maggiore. Right, so I've turned your microphone on now, so... So you're an architect. Now I've had a look. You've got a new website, a new office. You've got two articles. You've got oneness. Is this a bit of a reinvention of yourself?
Yeah, it is a bit. It's been a long, tough journey the last 5 or 6 years. So it is a reinvention. It's like I've spent a lot of time looking after me myself, doing a lot of meditation, and. And in doing that, was able to, I guess, what I call heal the wounded little boy inside. And in doing that, once you do that and clean yourself up, the universe jumps in behind you and the work flows, the right partner shows up and, life becomes really beautiful.
Yeah, because you really had a difficult time with a partner who had cancer and...
Yeah,
that must have been a very, because you hadn't been together very long, I don't think.
No, it was interesting. As I think I said in the article, it taught me a lot. And one of the things it taught me was two of the kind of spiritual healers that were helping me at the time, when they explained that it was her that was dying and not me, I could be at peace with it and just be with her and support her. But I think most of us think we're going through the process.
Yeah, and that's very hard because it's the person we really, it's often when we're close to somebody, it can be very painful. I went through that with a friend of mine. You're absolutely right.
I found it really beautiful to be able to go through it with somebody with them as opposed to them, say, getting hit by a bus.
Yes.
Yeah. It was as powerful as birth.
Yeah.
She inadvertently, as she was going through it, let me off the hook on things that I didn't realize I was on the hook for.
Well, this friend of mine, he said to me, and because he knew he was going, and I saw him the day before he died, and he said to me, this could be far worse, And I said, what do you mean? He said, it could be you. And I went, what? He said, well, I'm close to it now. I've done it.
Yeah.
You don't need to do it.
Yeah.
And it was really interesting. I went, what do you mean it could be worse? Because I thought, how could you be any worse? He said, it could be you. Mm. And he was very comforting, and I actually did see him on the day before he died.
Yeah.
That was, sometimes people don't, all, when you've got people apart from you, don't always get that.
No.
Because I used to go and visit him 3 to 4 times a week in hospital.
Yeah.
And, he was a very close friend of mine. Mm. But still, you've got that when you're with the person, it's...
Yeah, and it teaches you to have a beautiful connection with everybody.
And, of course, you've got a new, I don't know how new the partner is, five children?
2 years we've been together, five children, Angie, and I've got one son of my own, but I didn't think that I could ever handle more than one. And then
five is a lot.
Then I realised I was from a. I've got three sisters. Of course, I could handle it, and it's actually it's been tough, but it's getting easier and easier.
Being a stepfather's not. I mean, I've got two stepchildren, and now in their 40s, and I just treasure the fact that they're in my life.
Mm.
But to begin with, they had to teach me a lot.
these
and they did it quite painlessly.
These three daughters have taught me a lot, you know,
because
all of my upsets as an adult or a child were from my three sisters.
Yeah.
So they're just re-showing me what I need to clean up. It's great.
Well, I remember my stepdaughter telling me one day, you know, I got grumpy. I used to get grumpy on a Sunday for some reason. You know, that man sort of thing? And she said, look, it's just, you're cutting off your nose to spite your face. You might have only been 13.
Yeah.
And I didn't want to do something. She said, "If you'll just regret not doing it if you're 13-year-old. I never forget that."
Yeah.
So, architecture, you didn't pass school certificate to begin with?
Nope.
And so, what was the future looking like for that for you then?
I guess a bit of a struggle, the stigma of failing school certificate and being what do they call you, a second year fifth or something like that.
Yeah.
And I'd seen other people go through that, but I wasn't academic, you know. Even when I got it and passed, I got technical drawing 51%, and here I am.
Technical drawing.
Yeah, here I am as an architect now, you know, and I went through university, straight C's. It was the most difficult thing I did.
Right.
And it's like I say to people, you know, I can put a 20-story building together, but I can't pull a car apart. And, you know, my father's an engineer.
I can't do the cars either.
But it comes, and, you know, I'm about to turn 50 in a month and a bit, and from what I can see out there, you get better and better as you get older as an architect. And the meditation's really helped. You know, I've, you know, not in fear of picking up the phone or having the money conversation with the clients, whereas, you know, literally a year ago, that was still there.
At the stage when you're talking about money, there's nothing visible, is there, that, like, nothing's built.
No, and it's what you have to realize as an architect, it's the biggest spend of people's lives, and they have to absolutely trust you. And I've made mistakes, you know, I've let people down time-wise and all the rest of it, and I've noticed that, and I'm attempting to continue to clean that up, you know, kind of under-promise, over-deliver instead of over-promise and don't deliver.
Well, when you've got things happening in your life, it must be very hard to get up and do that work. And you've got something going on in your life that is hard. You know?
Yeah, I think every human being's going through it.
You know, we're all going through the same stuff,
different story, same effect on the individual, I think.
So you initially started off as a draftsman.
Yeah, I got a drafting job at Modulock Industries, and they did houses very similar to Lockwood, except the timber panelling was vertical. There's lots of them on the island.
Is that because you like tech drawing or...?
Well, I'd finished school certificate, and then all of a sudden there I am, and there's a job, and I get it. Mm. And they say, you've got to go to tech. So I went to Carrington, and I lived in Manurewa. I would ride a bike to East Tamaki and catch buses to Mount Albert and then come home somehow.
So you were dedicated?
Yeah. Well, I didn't know it at the time, but
But you were?
Yeah. So I did that for 3 years. You have to get 3 years of practical experience, got the drafting degree, and then a guy that was there... he was leaving Peter Hill Architects, who was in Parnell, and said, do you want my job? And I applied, and I got it, and spent time there with Peter, and then became his partner at some point. And Peter's on the island now.
And he got you to do...
and he was great. He kept encouraging me and other staff to go do the architectural degree, you know, and I had no idea I wanted to go to university. All of a sudden, I'm there, and then I realise I'm on the honours board in my high school, and I went, wow, I used to look at those and go, wow.
Yeah. Oh, wonderful, yeah.
Yeah.
So you did your degree, and then you were working with Peter?
Yeah, worked with Peter for however long it was, became a partner, I'm not sure how long, and then we split, and I've been out on my own ever since.
I think I know Peter. He lives up on the hill overlooking...
Yeah, married to Catherine Hanley.
That's right. Yeah. Yep.
End of Margaret Reeve Lane.
Tony Ann knows them.
Yep.
That was here before. She knows them well. I don't know them very, very well. But,
yeah, you know, and he's retired, but he's designed that house up there, and it's for, you know, he designed it when his, don't quote me, 70s maybe. It's gorgeous. Good.
Yeah. Home. So you've got a new office, which is obviously down in that little...
Yeah, the mower business there. Yep.
Yeah. And you've got your office there. How long have you been there?
Since mid-June.
All right. So you've been there
been
a while?
It's been very quick. It's like... They say when you do this meditation work, things flow and you don't even, you know, like time is really quick. So I've been in there. We've set it up. It's got a lovely back lawn.
Yes, it has.
It's stunning.
I've been to functions when it was the old place. And out the back's lovely. It's surprising how much is out there.
Yeah, and what we're doing is at the moment I'm having functions every second Thursday with all the real estate agents as a marketing exercise. And there are other businesses down there, and we're starting to get together and do group advertising. We'll have functions out on the back lawn. It should be quite unique for Waiheke. When I look around, the office stock, let's call it, the quality of it isn't that good. And all of a sudden, you know, Matthew Smith's got this mega office for Ray White, and we've got something of as good a quality.
Yeah.
And we need more of it.
Yeah.
And that business centre is, you know, it's pulled six home businesses out of home into something a bit more professional.
And I think sometimes businesses are reluctant to get together because it looks like too much competition or you're going to compete with somebody. And in fact, I work in mental health, and the NGOs have over the years slowly got together.
Yep.
And we're so strong now.
Yep.
And we're not competing with each other at all. Whereas previously, oh, better be careful, I'll take clients off you or anything. It never happened anyway.
Yeah.
But we just got this great strength now.
Yeah.
And we're unbeatable.
Yeah.
But it took a bit of doing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, it's been nice. And, you know, there's three ladies doing, you know, interior work, a jeweler. So Timmy Smith, the jeweler.
Yeah.
She's stunning work. And... is it Heidi Altman's doing interior design and Fashion Magpie, I think it is, Chrissy, doing clothing in one end, and then you've got Tomic Architectural Builders in between us.
Architectural Builders?
Yeah, they only work for architects. So they do
Right. So that you'd work with, so they'd specialise in that, and that would be good to have someone who specialises.
It's going to be quite useful, but I haven't used them as
yet. And so how long have you been on the island?
I wish I'd written it down. About 12 or 13 years.
Right. So it's been a while.
It's been a while.
Yeah.
But yeah, and most of it's been locked in a bedroom or a lounge somewhere on my own, saving money and doing whatever I was, healing myself, really.
Yeah, right. So did you have a break from architecture?
Good question. When you go through the meditation process, they say you go through what they call the dark night of the soul. And that is the breaking of the ego. And you end up, I ended up hating being an architect, like for at least maybe 18 months. Just did not want to pick up a pencil. And then you break through that, and now I love it. Completely love what I do. You may not believe this, but I'm actually doing freehand sketches for the first time in my life. I used to do them before and think they were bad and never do them. I'm doing hundreds of them effortlessly and giving them to clients. They love them. And I'm 49 and I've only just started doing that.
Because there's two things. Because I love looking at plans. This isn't about me, but I'm just one thing I'll tell you. I've got a chance to do a study with the Interior Decoration Institute, and whether I study with them or whether I think I'm up to it, but they offered me a half price thing, and it was, but I'm not sure I can do it. But what I'd love to be able to do is do freehand drawing and also print like you guys do.
We're trained to print.
I need to be trained to print. I love being able to do it because my handwriting I don't like, and I try and print properly. It's just fussy, I suppose, for me, but I like that idea.
I know what you mean.
But I like the architecture, particularly that American who, you know, just when you're going to say it, you're completely gone. Who's the famous American?
Frank Lloyd Wright.
Frank Lloyd Wright. And you can look at this. I used to look at his stuff on the Arts Channel.
Yeah.
It's just,
Oh, it's beautiful.
The man's a genius. But there's lots of other people too, and that was a wonderful thing.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of wish I was back in that era because they designed everything down to the teaspoons, you know, everything, you know, and that's why when you look at it, it all hung together because he did the whole lot.
Yeah,
and chairs, everything.
And then you look back at the time of the that sort of art and crafts movement.
Yep.
And
yep.
the houses.
Yep.
And a few of my friends lived in a particular house. Gosh, I didn't think I'd be talking about this, but it was a particular New Zealand designer, him and his son, I think.
Yeah.
And they designed houses and built them, and they adzed beams and all sorts of things. Yeah. And that was amazing. But that was that whole thing.
Yep.
You could buy his furniture.
Yep.
And you could buy his father's house.
Mm.
So you had the house and the furniture. And that was amazing. So where's architecture for you right now? You've obviously got a thriving practice.
Yeah, the practice has taken off and it's become effortless for me. And, you know, the clients through last summer, the last, let's call it the cycle, I call it, Labor Weekend to Easter, I priced probably $1 million worth of architectural fees. And mates of mine would look at me and go, oh, you'll get 10% of that. And I went, oh, yeah, that's about what the ratio is. Well, I reckon I've hit 50% and the other is still there.
Yeah.
And it's not that I've got a whole pile of money. You've got to get staff and do it.
Mm-hmm.
But it's, yeah, it's flowing. And we're about to get into the new cycle. And I'm just employed a admin PA lady. My son's doing architecture, so he's giving me 15 hours from Wellington, and the technology and to be able to do that with Skype and Dropbox, and, you know, we chat.
Yeah.
And, you know, I'm connecting with my son again. I separated and he moved to Wellington with his mum when he was 12, and I haven't had a lot of connection, and that's been beautiful, you know, supporting a new family and my son.
Yeah. Oh, wonderful. Yeah. And the technology, just stunning, isn't it? Now, there's just no reason. Distance is nothing.
No, and over, I'd say, 70% of my clients are based in Europe.
And they want property on
they are hitting,
island.
They are hitting my website. So we've got Luxembourg, Paris, two in London, and they're wanting to retire here. Some of them are young and they're having their first child, and they're wanting to build something here and then move here in 5 years' time.
Great.
And it's, you know, this island's amazing.
And they're picking you up on that because you got that new website. That
they were picking it up off the old one, yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
I mean, the old one was good, but the
new one's flash.
It's got beautiful
pictures, yeah, interactions.
Pictures and colours, and it just feels really good.
Yeah, and we've just whipped it up there. We're going to chop and change it and add more stuff to it. But, that's what's happening. So part of the reason I'm doing the marketing is that a lot of architecture gets done by Auckland architects here. And there's a lot of talented architects who are locals. So I want to try and get some of that work as well.
Oh, right.
Because, to be honest, I haven't actually got a lot of local work.
That's interesting,
it's,
isn't it?
It's bizarre. Yeah, I've been here 13 years and all my work's from people in Europe.
Yeah. But that's interesting. Is that something word of mouth, or do they just go looking?
They just go looking, and then
the internet's big, isn't
and
it?
They have the conversation. You Skype them, and they get comfortable, and you lead them through the process, and then at some point they commit.
Yeah. It must be really important to be comfortable with the architect. I mean, if you weren't, it just.
Yep.
I remember my dear ex. Well, she's still my wife, actually. My dear wife had this great trust in me that we'd build a labor-only house.
Yep.
I knew nothing.
Yep.
And you know, you had to. I just lost faith with the builders, and I just lost faith with them, and I didn't trust them.
Yeah.
And it's an awful situation. I got my cousin, who was a builder for Fletcher's, came in, and he taught me.
Yeah.
He stood by me. He said, get $2,000, put it in your pocket, and we'll finish this. And every time I needed something, cash went well.
Yeah,
But I lost faith with the builders. I just didn't, because they didn't treat me nicely.
Yeah.
And I remember another person who was finishing off didn't treat Jules nicely, and I just told him to leave.
Yeah.
And he went, and he was criticizing what she wanted. I just said, go. Yeah. He said, you can't do that. I said, oh, yes, I can. I'm paying. And I think that's the thing. You've got to have that faith.
Yeah, you do.
It's that big thing that's spending.
It's really hard. I mean, it's the biggest spend of your life. It involves everybody from your lawyers through to your labourers to plumbers, drain layers, you name it.
Yeah.
And they've all got to be on board. Yep. And they're not often.
No.
And it's about managing all of that. And, you know, the price of building on this island's ridiculous. You know, just ridiculous.
I've got some friends who are carpenters. I better not say much, but I get that impression. Do you do the project management of the build?
Yeah, we can run the whole process. Some clients choose to do that themselves from tendering onwards to save money.
Yeah, and do they come back to you?
I don't know whether they save themselves any money, but they, you know, and you have to. It's a, you know, there's a lot of money involved in the, you know, even our architectural fees. So,
yeah.
So if they do that themselves, they could save 30%.
Yeah, you've got to know a bit though, because
you
people,
do. Yeah.
I mean, I was being told things, and I went, "Oh yeah, okay," and yep. It didn't work.
Yeah,
but I didn't know. But when I got Neil, my cousin, who's 6'3", he was handy to have. He's a guy your size.
Yeah,
very
yeah.
handy to have them because they go, okay, we'll do this. What's the biggest challenge of building a house on Waiheke?
Oh, there's a lot of them, actually. It's the sites are steep, either up or down. Mm. So getting the materials in and getting the waste materials out. We've had an earthquake in Christchurch, which has triggered, you know, need for more geotechnical reports on the land, which frankly I kind of disagree with. All they're doing is telling us to put the piles down deeper, but you can't stop an earthquake. It's going to do what it's going to do. And if it's, you know, I'm not sure what percentage of the building value that it's increasing it by, but that's one of the things. You've got, you know, you've got resource management, building consents. They've seem to have streamlined reasonably well. They're looking at streamlining it again. We did talk about this, and I looked it up, but it, you know, it's like reading the Bible again. I went, oh, I'm not going to do that.
No, I looked it up too, and I thought, I won't mention that.
But, you know, what we need to do, and I think, if I can quote him, Anthony Yates, the previous head planner who's now got out on his own, he had a meeting in our offices a while back, and one of the ways of speeding it up is that we, as consultants, can provide council with the soft copy of all of our reports, and then council can cut and paste those reports to speed it up. And I've always said, well, why have we got two teams of trained consultants going up against each other? You know, why can't there just be one?
Yeah, that makes sense.
And that would speed it up,
yeah.
You know, and that would help, you know, help the clients, because that those consent costs and all of the hoops you've got to jump through, you know, all add to it.
Well, unfortunately, I said to you, we had a bit of problem getting the microphone sorted out this morning, and I haven't gone anywhere near what I'd like to talk to you about, especially about oneness. Would you like to come back in again?
I'd love to come back and talk about that.
We could make some time and come back in, and because it seems like your architecture is something you've absorbed now into your being almost, like it's not necessarily just a job, it's something that you live. And I think you are being so creative. I mean, that's the thing that helps you so much.
Yeah.
I mean, I know people don't think the radio is that creative, but I can tell you it is, and it's fun, and it helps
fun.
Me a lot.
My first time, I'm enjoying it. Give me one. I'll set up in my office.
Yeah, okay, in we fact, can do
you
that.
You guys know, thinking you could, as I drove here, I thought, well, you could set up outside all of the six businesses down there for a weekend, and we could do a big thing, you know?
We can do outside broadcasts.
Yeah,
it's not impossible. We've got a young guy who we were all looking at buying all this equipment, and this young guy, he was second year before, he's in his last year at high school, it was the second to last year, and he developed a whole thing and practiced it out there.
Well, off one laptop, probably.
Yeah.
Instead of all of this stuff.
Yeah. I'm just looking at him going, okay, how do you do that?
You can probably do it off your iPhone now.
Yeah, I know. It's quite right. Okay, well, look, thank you very, very much for coming in.
You're welcome.
You're listening to Waiheke Radio, 88.3 and 107.4 FM.
Marin Lawyers. Lawyer. I always think of you as a lawyer, and we were talking about the law before. So you're in to talk about Matiti and the marina. I read in the Gulf News. How are things going for you?
It's going well. It's we're a week away from the hearing actually starting. And, of course, the breaking news this week of a new ferry competitor has added a very new dimension to the case.
Is that what will that add?
Well, Direction Matiatia, through its experts and also its lay witnesses, has been saying consistently that one of the problems with the proposed marina at Matiatia is that it precludes the prospects of an expanded space for increased ferries in the future. And by and large, that's been dismissed by the marina developer as something in the future, not a reality. And we now have the reality that as from, I believe it's the 4th of October, we'll have a ferry sailing every half hour, either Fuller's or the new Explore Group ferries.
And this firm, I mean, I've always said before, the problem with having an extra firm was that they never created a whole lot of new passengers.
That's right.
But this seems to be, and if their boat went, that was it. But they seem to have two boats.
Yes.
They seem to have the cover of the Gulf News. Mm. And good on them if they can do it. It's a big ask to compete with Fuller's.
Absolutely. Although, by all accounts, it's a very established service in terms of a long-established company with operations across New Zealand and Australia. So,
and they've got good looking boats and solid boats and an extra boat if something goes wrong. And it's very, as Fuller's well know. And people do have an option, and they're obviously going to do other ones to different places. And
absolutely.
It's a busy little place, the harbour now.
It is.
And Matiatia is too. Very busy.
Yes. And so certainly the breaking news about a new ferry service adds that weight to what it is that Direction Matiatia has been saying about the problems associated with Matiatia being the transport hub and being the gateway and taking up a large chunk of that with what is effectively a car park for boats.
Someone actually explained to me how high that wall would be. That's scary.
It is scary.
Do people really know there's going to be that big wall there?
I'm not certain that people understand both the size of the proposed marina and the height of the marina itself. And one of the interesting things that our experts have identified is that Matiatia is a classic horseshoe-shaped bay. And there's a symmetry to it when you come in on the ferry, that on the right-hand side you've got some boats just bobbing gently in the water, and on the left-hand side you've got a sort of comparable number of boats bobbing in the water. So there's a real symmetry to it.
And when you look at what's around there, you've got the old par there, and you look down and you've got a little beach, and then you look over there and you've got rocks and things, and then you've got another little, yes, it's got a beautiful touch to it.
Absolutely, and the difficulty associated with the proposed marina is that the heights of the breakwater walls will effectively block out, even without boats in the marina, will block out that sort of sense of it being a horseshoe bay. But what people generally don't understand is that should the marina go ahead, there will be a corresponding increase in the number of moorings on the right-hand side of the bay as you're coming into it.
Oh, because the other ones will have to go over
there.
Yes,
and the council has indicated that may be extended to 96 moorings. So what you have is then a sense of real clutter coming into Matiatia of 160 boats and masts and several big rock walls.
Oh, it's
on
like
one side.
St. Luke's Mall car park.
Absolutely.
And I never liked that.
Absolutely. Yeah. And again, when we think about both the sort of cultural heritage and the historical aspects of Matiatia. For me, it's really significant that someone like Rob Delamore gives a huge tract of land to the people of New Zealand to ensure public access to that very beautiful sweep of the bay, and that while the marina itself won't take away or encroach upon any of the land that Rob gifted to the people of New Zealand, it will take away the sense of it being that open and public space.
So whereabouts are you with your fundraising? You've got a, is it, I'm a little out of touch. Is it a function coming up, or has it been?
No, there is a function coming up. So we've raised to date about $115,000. To date, we've spent about $110,000.
Right.
And what's significant about that, David, is that the vast majority of the funds that have been raised to date have consisted of the $10 and $20 and $50 donations from individuals.
Yeah.
We're not talking big chunks of money. We've been really fortunate to have had the support of a lot of local artists who have run a range of events in the past, and they've come together again for another fundraiser, and that's going to be held when is it? It's the art auction, and it's on the 7th of October, that's which right. is the day after the case starts.
Right, and no reserve.
No reserve art auction. John Hawkesby, who's been pulling it all together for us, has done an amazing job in getting the artists inspired to create some beautiful pieces that we're going to be really lucky to be able to snap up without those sorts of reserves on it that we might otherwise see.
And people like John Hawkesby can ring up people and can talk to people and pull people, and absolutely. You need that kind. I mean, I know how much work you've done. And
you've been listening to the interviews from Island Life, a weekly look at Waiheke people, events and issues, every Saturday morning from 10 till 12, with interviews repeated on Wednesdays at 7 p.m. and Thursdays at 12:30 p.m. Island Life is brought to you by The Village Butchery, the place to go for great cuts of meat and friendly service. You'll find them at 102 Ocean View Road, Onirua.